Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Monday. It is July 5th, 2021, the 186th day of the year. And we're grateful, as always, to everyone who chooses to join us today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever discovered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the link in the upper left-hand corner that says Start Here, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book provides a narrative description for the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. It's a tool I've been using to great effect for the past 17-plus years to improve the quality of my life and relationships and effectively turn any negative emotional state into part of the infallible guidance system that each of us is gifted. You can also download the actual tool itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click and download. No requirement for signing up for anything. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. And if you click on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app. It contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope you do that soon and often, and then if you have questions or comments or testimonials, you give us a call, 563-999-3581 is the call-in number. And if you call that number and press 1, it'll put a question mark by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code. We've also been doing the Pam Grout Course in Miracles workbook lessons and the Pam Grout Course in Miracles experiment book this year. And so since we're in the 186th day of the year, and we're on a Monday, so that means we've skipped two lessons. Lesson 184 was The Name of God is My Inheritance, and Lesson 185 is I Want the Peace of God, and today's lesson is Salvation of the World Depends on Me. Now, Pam Grout has a technique that says, if a lesson doesn't resonate, I return to my old standby. And for her, Lesson 184 doesn't resonate. So she says, I flip back to Chapter 30 in the text where, among other things, I'm told, do not fight yourself or get too preoccupied with every step. And this lets me throw this lesson in the dumpster instead. Instead, I review the details it calls rules for decision. Decisions are continuous, and most of the time, we don't even realize we're making them. For example, if I decide my daughter is gone and that I can't talk to her, that becomes my reality. It's a set structure. It's a belief that forms my life experience. If I surrender that self-imposed structure to the divine buzz, then Taz and I can communicate. We can radiate love to each other, with or without physical bodies. Then I'm able to notice the Albie Einstein, the playful photo with his tongue sticking out, the talisman, as sent a sign on my morning's walk. Thanks, Taz. I especially appreciate that it was on the back of an RV. I feel your unconditional love pulsing within my heart. So here are the steps from Chapter 30. Begin each day by deciding what kind of experience I want. Amazing awesomeness works for me. Big, buoyant, generous, love sounds like a plan. Commit to making my decision, no decisions on my own, imposing no structure from my past and from my judgments. The Course reassures me, if I make no decisions by myself, this is the day that will be given me. These two steps, practiced well, allow for life's miracle to become patently obvious, obscured no longer by fear. Her lesson 185 is called Check the Inner Dashboard. She quotes Darren Aronofsky as saying, don't let the bullets take you out. So when making decisions, even small things, I first consult my inner dashboard. I use the following six-word indicator, the indicator light, quote, how does it make me feel, close quotes. If a thought is fun to think, if it brings me peace, I milk that sucker for all it's worth. If it's less than pleasing, if it causes suffering, it's time to back away, Jack. Lesson 185 gives me another indicator light, another handy six-word phrase. If I mean these six words, I want the peace of dude, the dude. Even for just an instant, no further sorrow is possible in any form, place, or time. This lesson is a godsend, because if anyone has an excuse to forfeit peace or to suffer, it's a mother who lost her only child. It's unthinkable, really, to lose the precious being who grew inside my womb, nursed at my breast, and became a brilliant, kind, imaginative person right before my very eyes. Taz, who I communicate with on the daily, says, choosing to feel good, wanting peace, and proving it's unnecessary to suffer is my new mission. Suffering, she points out, only isolates me from the whole of humanity. It disconnects me from the life force, like a cell phone that's too far from a transmission tower. A mind obsessed with its own negative thoughts is like cancer, cut off from all the healthy cells. She said, I owe it to her fellows, or to my fellows, and indeed to her, to nourish a positive inner state. She compares humans' oneness and connection to a grove of aspens. They may look like a bunch of separate trees, but a mountainside of aspens is actually a singular organism with a life force connected in an extensive root system. If I don't nurture a giving, loving inner state, I could poison the whole grove. Grief is one thing. Suffering is another. So thank you, Taz. I'll say it again. I want the peace of the Creator. Today's lesson 186, A Tale of Two Pams. She quotes Marcus Aurelius as saying, reject your sense of injury, and the injury itself disappears. Lately, I've been observing the two Pams who live inside my brain. I find it's helpful to narrow them down, to notice which one is in charge. First, there's the blessed Pam. She, of course, notices how lucky she is, how amazingly awesome life is, how everything always works out. And then there's the FML Pam. FML Pam, if you don't know what this means, I'll just say it's a social media acronym people use to express displeasure with certain life events. FML Pam tends to notice problems, just wee little ones, like politics or wrinkles or a belief that something is not exactly how it should be. FML Pam tends to be a writhing, whirling dervish that, like a pinball, careens around my head, lighting up neurotransmitters of fear and worry. When blessed Pam is driving the car, life is good. As the popular T-shirt proclaims, reality is sweet and celebration is the norm. But when FML Pam calls for a Chinese fire drill and runs around the car to grab the wheel, a whole different story unfolds. It's quite fascinating to watch which Pam is generating my thoughts. Nowadays, when I notice FML Pam getting noisy, I simply tell her, thanks for sharing, and remind her that lesson 186, the salvation of the world depends on me, that this is what it promises, that problems are nothing but wrong perception, and they literally wither and die when I don't feed them with my attention. When I pump up what the Course calls my weakened ability to be grateful, my perception changes, as does my whole world. Today, I trust that I can never be abandoned. I have everything I need, and life never stops working on my behalf. So that's our Course in Miracles lesson for today and the commentary from Pam Grout, and we have 48 minutes before somebody joins us to fill in the second hour. So we have time for comments and questions and stories about how people are celebrating their independence this Independence Day of, in America anyway, in North America, in the United States of America. So how can we support you? What's on your mind? What is a topic that would serve you that I could entertain some discussion about? Susan, welcome.
Hi, Dr. Tim. If nobody else has a hand up, I have a couple of questions, and I love those lessons. I'm not sure who said this the other day. It might have been Ellen in my Zoom group, but she quoted Byron Katie as saying, if you feel the same about life and death, you will have no fear. And I thought that was a great idea, but I discovered I don't agree with it. So I would like to just hear you take it apart and put it back together. I may or may not be afraid of my own mortality, but I have fears about, as you know, fear is my favorite miserable. I have fears about the well-being of my son and my grandsons, and whether I'm here or not. Of course, if I'm not here, I might not be able to worry. I don't know what we do after this life, but I can feel pretty okay about dying myself, but I have this other set of fears that don't seem to have much to do with at least my death. So I guess that's as best I can do in posing the question.
Okay. Well, I suppose my answer begins with how you're not afraid of dying, and you're not afraid of somebody else dying, and you're not afraid of suffering, and you're not afraid of somebody else suffering. You're just generating fear. And once we generate fear, we can create a limitless number of rationalizations for it. It's the same thing with anger. And of Course in Miracles says, you know, of course you're going to feel angry. Just quit justifying it. Right? Quit thinking there's something useful in it. Aside from it being the alarm to let you know that your thoughts are off the mark, your anger is just a creation of your pouring an excessive amount of mind energy into the thoughts that generate anger, right? That's essentially trying to pretend that what's true isn't true. That's one simple way to talk about any negative emotion that we generate. And so, you know, if you begin with that, which is one of the core pieces of this work, if you begin with that understanding that you're not really scared because somebody that you know might die, or somebody that you know won't have a happy life, or somebody that you know might suffer, you just have fear up in your system. And fear is fundamentally a rejection of what is. Right? Everything except that immediate self-protective response that comes from a noticed physical danger. Everything else, every mental and emotional energy that we experience as negative, whether it's fear or anger, is self-created. And to use that acronym that's so useful, it's self-induced nonsense. And when I try to tell myself I'm fearful because of this or because of that, it's the same wild goose chase as saying I'm angry because this person did this or this person did that. So that's where I would begin. Right? So if you're asking about how do I get rid of my fear that someone I love might die, it's all of the above. You know, it's everything you would do to get rid of any other fear, since all fears beyond the immediate self-protective response that we call, you know, the fight or flight, all those fears are self-created. They're irrational. So when you pursue anything other than the use of a tool, like you pursue some kind of rationalization to calm your fear, it's a trap. Not a very satisfying answer, is it?
Well, it leads me to another question, which may or may not be even related, but I had a weird experience doing a worksheet yesterday morning. I woke up with this vague sense of doom that I often do, dark, anxious, depressed. So I started off. My trigger is, I don't know, but I'm feeling this. Then I went into the patter. And, of course, the goal is to not have this, to feel better, to feel great, joy, peace. I went into the patter, and the first thought that came to me was, it can't be a memory because I was in the womb, but my mother used to talk about what kind of a baby I was in there. She said I was extremely lively, moved around a lot, and when I was born, I kept that up, and they were surprised I was a girl because she associated such liveliness with being a boy, and she wanted a boy. And so, but my first piece of information about my fetal self was that I was lively, which I interpreted to be enthusiastic, happy. I don't know why I did, but I did, and it's not just a lightweight thing. I think of myself as basically lively and very happy. So when I thought about that baby and thought about appearing and thought about how my mother, even when I was a little kid, she used to say, I like your spunk. She said that a couple of times, several times, spunky, you're a spunky kid. And she reported one of my teachers said that about me. And I was proud of that. And I thought that's the truth about who I am. I am enthusiastic about my life. I like being alive. So the anxiety and the depression went away for the entire day. And I thought, whoa, I can't see much of a connection between those two. But there was a healing that went on there. And then this morning, I woke up with my usual doom and gloom, and I went back to being a baby, and it didn't seem to work. And then I thought, all right, I'm just going to see this set of doom and gloom thoughts like Pam Grout, the miserable Pam. And I said, okay, I'm not going to pay attention to you. I'm just going to pay attention to happy things. And it was a bit forced. I went for a walk as usual and looked around and appreciated everything, but it was a mental exercise. I was still dragging. And the day improved somewhat, but even through my teaching, I was still not in great shape. And I thought, wait a minute, why didn't I use this? And then I wondered the difference. Here's the question. What is the difference between dissociation or disassociation? And I've never been clear about the difference between those two, if there is one. Michael has explained it, and the brain cells aren't awake yet. Or just plain pushing something out of your head. I guess one of them involves being conscious of it. I suppose I'm answering my own question. I'm aware of these feelings, but I'm choosing not to have anything to do with them, whereas dissociation is something else again. It's probably becoming unconscious
kind of that,
in a certain way.
It's kind of that auto process where I'm not aware that I did it. I block it out and I'm not aware, as opposed to if I associate with something, I'm consciously identifying with it. If I disassociate from something, I'm consciously pushing it aside. That's the understanding I would offer at this point. And it doesn't really matter. It's a word, right? And what do they mean? Yeah. They mean what we make them mean. But there are these two separate dynamics that we can be aware of in us as humans. One is we know we're pushing a thought away. And another one is we're just unconscious to it. It has some automatic process in us has decided it's not safe or, you know, useful for us to have access to it. And it blocks it from our awareness without us knowing it.
So what are we left with? We're left with the bad feeling without the thought, right? I mean, we haven't gotten rid of the bad feeling, or have we?
Right. Well, it all depends on the person and the time. I mean, there are many people who find, you know, that remember the four-step process that I sent you the other day?
Yeah.
Related to... I mean, there are many people that find if they step into a process like that and do it enough over time, they get relief from the emotions and the upset because they're taking that conscious control and they're... And then there are people who are just constantly stuck and no amount of that conscious work seems to provide relief. So sometimes when people say, hey, I'm just going to whistle a happy tune and go on down the road. Like, you know, what Pam Grout is talking about when she has the FML Pam going in her life is pretty miserable.
Yeah.
But when she has the blessed Pam top of mind, her life is great. Well, if the, you know, FML Pam comes up and she's pretty miserable, and she tries to just say, okay, thanks for your input, and move on to the blessed Pam and reminding herself how blessed she is to have the life she has, she might have to do that. This is kind of like resetting the filter over Rachma and Kuba in the brain over intentions and perception. I might have to do that dozens of times in a minute.
Yeah.
And eventually...
That's good to know.
Something wins out, right? Either the FML Pam wins out, the angry, bitter, resentful me wins out, and I spend some period of time down or depressed.
Mm.
Or the blessed Tim wins out, and I spend the rest of the day just basking in how grateful I am for all the good things that are happening in my life. And I still acknowledge there's this other thing that isn't the way I would prefer it to be. There is this other thing that is painful. There is this other thing. It's like what Pam Grout was talking about with her daughter. It's not like she pretends that her daughter's still alive in the flesh. She recognizes her daughter's not alive, and she has grief about that. And she chooses not to suffer.
Yeah, that's such an amazing, powerful example, because she happens to have experienced what I consider probably the worst thing a parent could experience, and she acknowledges that that's true, and yet still, she's amazing. I admire her so much. But I've seen other parents do the same. After a while, they do that, probably out of just not wanting to stay miserable. It's too hard to stay miserable. It's too miserable to stay miserable. Yeah.
Well, I have
those.
I've told the story that I've talked to people about. You know, I've given speeches and presentations where I talk to people about how Dr. Michael Rice had this event where he said, in the very early, probably the second live event I went to with him, he said, "All right, now I want you to think about some of the worst things that have happened in your life." And everybody groans. And he says, "Don't worry, we're not going to make you say and talk about them or anything." He said, "Now pick one of them that's 5 or more years in the past and raise your hand if you can see how it's led directly or indirectly to some of the best things in your life today." Every hand in the audience went up, including mine. And I've talked about that, and I've shared that with audiences. And I said, with the possible exception of the loss of a child, and at least twice that I can remember right now, and maybe 3 or 4 times when I was giving those presentations, people came up to me afterwards and said, "We just want you to know that even the loss of a child has led to some of the best things in our life today." And the first people that did it that shocked me were, there were a husband and wife team that had come to the networking speakers meeting that I was running at the time. And they were there because they were trying to build their public speaking skills, because they had created this not-for-profit to help people talk about suicide and depression and get to kids earlier, because their 20-something son had committed suicide. And they were there to tell me the tale that the benefits in their life already were beyond what they could have imagined, that they had met people, that they had met other people who had lost a child or a young adult. They'd met other people who were trying to help their young adult with suicide and depression, suicidal thoughts and depression, and their life had improved as a direct result of how they chose to respond to that event. So you were going to say something else right before I started that.
That's okay.
But I wanted to dovetail on something you were saying.
No, that was good what you added, and that's good to be reminded. In fact, we have an interim priest at our church who, the story in the Bible was about the raising of the daughter of Jairus, how she died when she was 12. Jairus ran to Jesus and begged him to come and heal her. Jesus does. She's healed. And this priest gave the most amazing sermon, because he said, "My wife and I had that happen to us, but the outcome was very different. Our son fell 9 feet from something, broke his neck, is paralyzed all but his right arm, and he's a lefty. He's able to speak and think. His brain is good, but he has no use of his body. And we didn't even know if he would live. So we got a partial satisfaction that he did not die, but his whole life is different." And yet that's what he said. He preached about how when they didn't know how to put one foot in front of the other, they were surrounded with loving people, people cooking for them, staying with them, taking them where they needed to go, practically breathing for them until they could start breathing on their own. And he said, the blessings from this have been huge, but I would never ask for this. Never would I ever want this or wish it on anyone. But what you say is true. And I guess what people like me who have a favorite miserable or fear is we just go to the worst case scenario and don't remember how much good is available no matter what. So that's great to be reminded of that.
And there are times when, you know, my best efforts to focus on the positive, they lose out to that sad or resentful or, you know, bitter mindset. And, you know, if you consider, you know, how many years it was before I, you know, learned this kind of tool to this level of, it was probably, 30 years old before I even encountered the writings of Krishnamurti. And,
yeah.
You know, probably 34, 35 before I started actively presenting them in my life. And I was probably, I don't know, what is it now? 45 years old before I was introduced to the Michael Rice's tools. So there's all of that history in my mindset, the practice of the cultural woe is me and blame others for my upset and believe that my emotions are caused by the external world, etc. And that is there to get, you know, kick in again whenever something triggers it, or I let my guard down, or I'm not actively focusing on the gratitude practice. And sometimes, even when I'm trying to focus on gratitude practice, I'll have these breakthroughs of the negative thoughts and the frustrations or the sadness.
Right.
And so it's, you know, it's my choice or decision at that point, depending upon which faculty I'm going to tap into, to either start using the tools right away or to, you know, fold for a while. The good news is the tools are always there that I can, you know, pick them up again if I choose to.
Right. That's sort of like what Michael calls prayer, opening the space for God to show up. The worksheet is like that. It's just an opening of a space so that God can show up when we're really tied in knots. Wow. And yeah, sometimes it doesn't work right then. You know, I appreciate that you're saying that about your own, you know, ups and downs. Because as you know, I tend to think that other people can do it better. And it's just, I guess misery is liking some company here. I don't wish it on you, but I appreciate your telling about that.
Well, it's about, you know, for my money in this work, it's about simply trying to describe the way things actually work. And, you know, if you find somebody who's saying they don't have those issues, maybe they've got a brain that works very, very differently from the average person's brain, or maybe they're just unconscious and they're not aware of, you know, what the actual dynamics are, and maybe they're a truly enlightened being and a gift to you know, have among us, and maybe just being in their presence will bring joy. But for almost everybody I've ever met who's honest about it, they've still got work to do, and that, you know, they're grateful for the tools, those that have encountered them. And yet the tools are not a magic wand.
Speaking of magic wands, you know, Dr. Tim, when you sent me that email about Jeffrey Schwartz, I listened to a couple of YouTube things, wrote down the four things, thought, oh, my God, because he says one really interesting thing in there, that it sounds as if without a certain kind of approach, you can't release this. I wish I had the email in front of me. That the brain needs a certain kind of help, and we haven't been aware of that kind of help, and these will help. It seemed very hopeful. And then when I thought about the tools, they found his four steps. They didn't resonate with me, like relabeling, which means naming the feeling as far as Walzak goes, right? It's similar to just naming the feeling. So I guess I'm going over into that, and I'd love to talk about those steps if nobody else is on the line.
Well, no, there's nobody else with a hand up. So just so everybody understands what's happening, the Dr. Jeffrey Schwartz has a book titled Brain Lock, and in it he talks about stuck neurological gears that cause thought to be acted out before the action can be stopped, because the brain's transmission mechanism cannot be put into neutral. So when the obsessive or addictive thought occurs, obsessive or addictive action follows almost instantaneously.
That's the part.
And it,
yeah.
And it talks about how, for some people, when they've done brain scans and they've mapped this out, they see how parts of the brain that normally, in a normal person, fire independently. In the person who's having an obsessive compulsive episode, they see the brain scans, these normally independent parts of the brain are firing simultaneously, almost as though they're stuck firing.
Mm.
And one of the things that they did in working on this, and they've, you know, clearly it wasn't a magic wand or a silver bullet. They did stimulus presentation with symptom deprivation as they had these people in the brain scan devices. And for some people, it ended up breaking the cycle where both parts of the brain or all four parts of the brain would fire, you know, in this kind of a rigid, stuck way. And when that happened, when they saw the brain firing change, the person reported no compulsion. And the obsessive compulsive cycle was broken. The example that they gave in one of the articles was they took a person who agreed to do this, and they had a very strong obsessive compulsive problem with thinking their hands were dirty and washing their hands to the point where the hands were red and raw. So they decided to undergo this treatment. So what was the treatment? The treatment was they dunk the person's hands in honey and then rolled them in dirt and then wrapped them in towels and taped them up.
Wow.
So imagine what that would feel like to a person who every little piece of dirt on their hands, they would obsess about and wash it until their hands were almost raw and bloody. But now this is a person who agreed to do it, and they had a safe word and everything else that the person, you know, wanted to get out. But they had the brain scan going, and they watched. And in the beginning, it was the brain was all locked, like all four parts of the brain were firing, and they're just stuck. But as they talked, as they did some breathing techniques, as they tried to carry a conversation with this person, eventually they got to the point where they had been there for the predetermined period of time, and they said, okay, so the experiment's over. You know, if you want, we can take the towels off and wash your hands. And the person said, no, but let me finish my story first. That was how thoroughly the person had gotten past the obsessive thought about their hands being dirty and the compulsion to wash them. Now, clearly, that's not a cure, or that's what they would do for everybody who has obsessive-compulsive disorder, and then there'd be no more obsessive-compulsive disorder. But it does illustrate, through the use of brain scans, what they're talking about and what Dr. Jeffrey Schwartz is talking about in his book, Brain Lock. So then, you know, in his book, he prescribes a four-step process, and Dr. Gabor Mate, you know, adds a fifth one. But it's basically slowing everything down, and you talked about relabeling it and then attributing it to, you know, this brain activity rather than some truth that I need to act on. And so was there more you wanted to say about that or question with that?
Wow. I wanted to ask you to back up and explain what happened in the brain to cause the dividing of those different parts
essentially, the theory is that you put it on extinction, right? I mean, you if you have this brain, these parts of your brain that are firing that tell you, you need to wash your hands, you need to get this thing off of you, you need to go take a drink, you need this, that, or the other thing. And every time you have that urge, it really isn't an urge, it's really a compulsion, it strengthens. Right? One of the theories they have about it is that it's anxiety is at the root of, and the pain of anxiety is at the root of addictions and is the root of obsessive-compulsive disorder. So if I have this anxious feeling and some part of my mind says, you know what, I think the light switch needs to be switched on and off 7 times. And if I count 7 as I do that, and maybe 7 is my special number, and I do it, I let myself turn the light switch on and off 7 times, and I feel better, I've just reinforced the idea that that pattern of thought in my mind and that particular brain firing needs me to do a certain action. And every time I do it, it reinforces it. So it becomes this habit that gets strengthened over time.
Right.
What they're doing with stimulus presentation and response prevention is they're putting the stimulus and the associated brain neural firings on extinction. So here's this person sitting with gunk and dirt, you know, grit stuck to his hands, wrapped in towels, giving the continuous stimulation that would tell his brain, oh my gosh, your hands are dirty. You absolutely need to go wash your hands, get this stuff off of there. But when he sat there long enough without acting on it, eventually it went to extinction. The brain just quit firing. It burned out. It's like, you know, you lift the weights long enough that the muscle just can't lift anymore, and it just falls away.
Mm-hmm.
That's the theory about how and why the different parts of the brain disengage. Now, as I said, it isn't a miracle cure, because if it was, and because this was, you know, probably 20-some years ago, maybe more, where they'd done those studies, it would have, you know, swept through the world and there'd be no more obsessive compulsive disorder. It's just
one of
the things that underlies this Dr. Schwartz four-step or the Gabor Mate five-step method. It's using the conscious willful part of my brain to step back in observer mode and relabel and reattribute and work with my thoughts rather than just instantly being driven to action by my thoughts or allowing myself to act from an auto response based on the thought.
Well, you know, that's
and the more I do that, the more... Go ahead.
Yeah. that's what Charlie's therapist has been doing with him. It's so good to understand it. Presentation and response prevention, is that what you said? I understood what you meant. You just don't allow the
usual I don't allow
pathway.
Myself to do what my brain is telling me I should go do. Once I've recognized that this is a repeated pattern and it happens again, whether it's picking up a drink.
Yeah.
Or you know, screaming at somebody or throwing a tantrum, or I my brain tells me this is the right thing to do here, and I refuse to let myself do it. It's, you know, bit by bit, it's the kind of thing that's in a little bit more structured format. It's what Dr. Michael Rice refers to as, you know, strengthening that muscle of will, that spiritual faculty of will. I'm going to step back and observe my thoughts and that automatic process without letting it drive my behavior.
Boy, this is so right on target with what's happening with my grandson. We are told, all of us, as soon as he launches into some kind of wanting reassurance for the thoughts he's having, we are supposed to refuse to talk about it. And he is so bright and so sneaky that he will find a way to get some kind of a hit from us, even without bringing up the issue at all. But in his mind, he has figured out another way of getting his drink or his hit, so that we almost can't talk to him. He's so wily about it. And when we point that out to him, he understands it. And it's so interesting that his father, who has anxiety, Charlie will spout chapter and verse, "Dad, all you have to do is turn your mind toward this. You know those thoughts aren't true and aren't real. And they're meaningless. They're just ridiculous. You don't need to think about them at all. Everything's fine." And he sounds like the professor of good health. But he doesn't apply it to himself. He'll get trapped in his brain loop. And we have just been backing away, actually walking out of the room if we can. I'm often in the car, so I can't do that. But was it you who suggested saying one thing over and over? I've been using that. What do you think is what I use?
Right. It's a good practice because it takes you out of trying to figure something out, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's giving the person a response so they know they're not being abandoned, but it's refusing to engage in that pattern. But what you're describing with your grandson and even your son is the idea of why I recommend, after you've tried it, a little bit of this, you know, cognitive behavioral type stuff, that you look at, you know, whether it's, you know, the Radin Clinic or Julia Britz down at Alternative to Meds, you look into a naturopathic physician who's got practice with this, experience with this, the obsessive compulsive thing, and you have an analysis of what's going on in this person's brain and body chemistry, and you try to help them on all those levels, not just continue to strive to get a cognitive behavioral solution to something that, you know, might be in fact driven by other factors, whether it's heavy metal toxicity or allergic or reaction or sensitivities to some foods or, you know, gut biome problem. And, you know, there are people who have been through this who understand that there are things you can change to get different results.
Right. Well, Jonathan and his wife have found a program in Philadelphia. I don't know anything about it, but they are applying for Charlie to go for 3 to 6, depending on which program he gets into, 3 to 6 hours a day for some weeks or months to work with him. And I have no, it's called the Rogers something, behavioral something. It's I've looked it up. I don't have a sense of they're working with functional medicine or alternative medical things at all, but this is what they are considering. And Charlie is so angry about the prospect of having to even take maybe a year off of school to go to this program that he is very motivated to get better. But what I see is that he's gone kind of underground. He says he feels better. He's acting as if he's feeling better. And then he'll have these breakthroughs where he slips and tries to get some kind of reassurance from us. But it's all on another level of what I think of as a rather dire situation. And I wish I knew more. I can find out more and ask you about it. I'll look it up again.
Okay. Well, at that level, the way you're talking about it, it sounds like, you know, a behavioral program, and that's good, but that's not all there is, right? We're talking about getting somebody to take a look at everything from top to bottom, gut biome, nutrient absorption, food sensitivities, heavy metal toxicity, hormonal balance, et cetera, because there's a way in which the physiology is showing us, the more we study it, the more the brain scans reveal it, that this is, you know, one affects the other, certainly. They're not individual. They're not completely separate. But it's not just what I'm choosing to think.
Yeah.
For some people, it is, you know, it is every bit as real at a physiological level as cerebral palsy is. So,
right,
you don't think your way into smooth muscle motion and clear speech when you have CP.
Right. Whoa! Thanks for going so deeply into this, Dr. Tim.
Well, you're welcome. Thanks for letting me share the resource with people so that they know what we're talking about. It's Dr. Jeffrey Schwartz's book, Brain Lock. I stumbled across it by reading Gabor Mate's book, In the Realm of Hungry Ghosts. Near the end of that book, he mentions Dr. Jeffrey Schwartz's work, and he adds a fifth step to it, which is to create something new and activate your creative impulse. And he's using it for his own obsessive compulsive addiction problem. So he's finding it quite valuable.
Oh, good.
Anything else we can support you with today?
No other hands up?
No other hands up.
So, I have a question.
And that would be what?
Mark, in the Gospel of Mark, Jesus says to his disciples, go and, you know, visit people and do things. And if they don't receive you, shake off the dust of your feet as a testimonial against them. And this is a question for Michael, and I might ask it on that hour if I still have the time. I'm trying to do three things at once. But a testimonial against someone sounds like a judgment. And I was wondering what the Aramaic words for that are. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be something to ask Michael if that's there, or Dale Ellen Hoffman, because he could actually look at Aramaic words. But I wouldn't venture to comment on that because it would be such wild speculation. And in line with what Michael's team have come up with from the Kabor's manuscript and the loving nature of the message that comes out of Yeshua's teachings and the writings of Paul that are actually attributed to Paul, not the ghostwriters that used his name to put all kinds of misogynistic, paternalistic stuff in there. I would say it's probably a little bit too judgmental, the way it's intended, and isolating. And it's probably more of, you know, if there was something like that that actually came from Yeshua, it was probably more like, look, if they don't have the eyes to see and the ears to hear, move on. Come back later and talk to them. Maybe they'll get it then.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, don't beat your head against a brick wall. The truth is the truth. It's available for everybody. Anybody can tune into it whenever they want.
Good. And the other thing I've been thinking about is the physical connection for getting well. I know they say that getting exercise is as good as an antidepressant or some similar things. Tapping is a physical connection to access how you're feeling and how your brain is functioning. I've gotten much more interested in this, partly because Charlie is so physical. He's a good athlete. And just, I have a friend who's doing yoga, mindfulness yoga, and says the same thing. In fact, I may put you in touch with her after she and I have talked some more, because she is becoming a kind of practitioner for yoga for mindfulness, and she went into it to, she and I used to meet and try to do worksheets, and the worksheets just didn't cut it for her for some reason. And for a while I had to work out being angry at her for not using the worksheets, and now she's found a way. Right. Shut up, Dr.
Being angry,
right?
Being angry, not at her. Remember how we started off the show.
Right.
Being angry.
Being angry.
And using her as an excuse for it.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Well, we've had some good dialogues, but that's really premature because I haven't really learned all that she's doing. But she feels a lot better and is managing some physical health problems well, too. She had COVID. She has lung problems. And she's managed to get better from all of those. Amazing. So anyway, that's just juicy stuff for the future.
All right. Well, I look forward to hearing from her, from you, if you think that would be a good person for me to connect with or interview for Journey's Dream or Mind Shifters Radio or whatever.
Dr. Tim, was it Mitzi and Rex that you were talking about their son, Journey's Dream, being the product of the wonderful outcome of losing a son?
Yes, they are the Rex, Mitzi, and Brea, the father, mother, and sister of Journey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Are three of the four founders of Journey's Dream.
Right. Okay. Thanks.
When I mentioned that, are you referring to in the interview that they wanted me to do for Journey's Dream that got reported? Is that what you're talking about?
I just knew about them.
So are you saying that I mentioned something earlier in this podcast?
In this show, yeah. Well, you mentioned
that was somebody else completely. That was years and years before I ever met. No, that was years. That was in another, practically in another professional life before I ever met Rex and Mitzi.
Okay. And I was just curious. No big deal.
All right. Well, thank you for the call and the questions. We're down to our last minute or less, so I'll mute you and put you on hold so you can be here for the second hour if you so desire, and I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate you. Hope you had a good weekend.
I'm in the middle of it.
Oh, okay.
Have a great show.
Well, all right, take care. Bye. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Monday, July the 5th, 2021. And our call-in number is 563 888-999-3581 and press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. Give Michael just a minute, and I'll direct you to our website, which is whyagain.org. And you can, there's just lots and lots of information. There's the Start Here button in the upper left corner. If you scroll down a little bit, you'll see a bullseye in the middle of the page, and both of those take you to the same place. You'll see that our apps are updated. I'm still having an issue with the online app that it doesn't want to print, so still working on that one. But everything else is coming along great. The apps are great, and they're up and running. And we just invite you to put the tools to work in your life. You know, we say in this work, don't believe anything, but put the tools to work, and you'll see that things change. And we welcome Michael to the show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Honored that you're here to continue this conversation, to continue this investigation into the depth of this first century Aramaic tools that we've uncovered and are committed to sharing on a global scale and supporting people learning. You know, it's a mindset is required that is so different from the traditional mindset to start to comprehend these tools that it's a major piece of work just to begin comprehension, to move out of the standard way of perceiving in this world, which is I have a perceptual construct that shows me that you're the problem in my life. It's all your fault that I'm experiencing this, but it's okay. I'll forgive you. I'll let you off the hook. To move from that to, I have a perceptual construct that's lying to me. I've been through this particular issue 87 different times with 42 different people. I acknowledge that I'm the only one that was there every time, and therefore, I have work to do. What is my work? I need to learn how to collapse the perception that projects my pain into my brain's image of you. I need to learn how to capture once again, the part of my mind that I've hidden from myself that I'm in denial about. And then I need to learn the skill of removing the energetic dynamics behind that issue. Now, that may sound simple, but it takes a mega major shift of mind. And the way that the mind actually, it more takes a skill of collapsing the mind and allowing yourself to look at the actual energetic dynamics beneath the surface of whatever's going on in your life. You know, you'll notice that even through a particular painful reality 87 different times with 42 different people, you are the only one that was there every time, and you'll notice that when you hold your breath, if you really start to pay attention, you'll notice that things that were trying to surface in your mind, when you hold your breath, you hide them from yourself. You remove them from awareness. And once they're removed from awareness, once the breath is held, once we enter into denial, and denial is the act of thinking or speaking as though something outside of us is the cause of what's moving inside of us, then we have to hide or dissociate from what's moving inside of us. Then that which we've hidden from ourselves pops up, transparently integrated to our brain's image of someone else. And somebody else shows up in our mind with our problem attached, and we share that it must be, or we swear that it must be their problem. And the tongue-in-cheek question that I ask so often is, if they're the one with the problem, why am I the one with the pain? If they were the one with the problem, obviously they'd be the one with the pain. And so we're looking to make this tool of forgiveness available on a global scale. And the tool of forgiveness is the tool that, as opposed to the Greek idea of letting other people off the hook, it's the tool with which you collapse your false perception that comes from the dissociated mind. You get to drop into the root of the dissociated content And when you bring it forward in the presence of love, the dissociated content begins its dissolution. And it's the dissolution of dissociated content that is forgiveness. It's the removal of what never belonged in the mind. So quite a different process than I'm going to let you off the hook and forgive you. So that's our project. That's basically what this whole, in a nutshell, is what this whole body of work is about. And we're delighted that you're here to lend an ear and take the tools, make use of them. We've been reading from Why Is This Happening to Me Again a little bit each day, although we've missed a few days when we got into some intense processing. And we're going to step back to the book now. If you're following it in the book, we're on page 86 on the in the paragraph on choosing teachers. And we're looking at the difference between the true teaching and teacher and the false teaching, or chapter 14. If you don't have a copy of the book and you'd like to get one, it is out of print right now, so we can't sell you one. But there are always plenty of used copies on Amazon or eBay that you can pick up. And or you can also go to our website and download it in any one of half a dozen or more different languages. So we're on page 86, and we're talking about the idea that false teachers are available or everywhere. You know, those who are working to gain for themselves at the cost of others, doesn't matter whether you're in the arena of religion or business or government, media, education, family, these false teachers can show up anywhere. It's a mindset. It's that mindset that will lie, cheat, steal, murder, do whatever it needs to in order to get what it wants. You know, we see it happening in the political arena so much right now. And so let's move to the next thought, and that is we're going to look at the more of the dynamics of the how to choose teachers. It's amazing how many people are continuously angry. You know the type who slam doors, kick the cat, and beat their kids. And they cannot identify the source of their anger. Most often, the rage comes from the helplessness of being in the grips of a false teacher and not knowing how to take back one's own power. This is a family dynamic oftentimes as well. The refusal to learn to live in harmony with truth leads to destructive behavior. The abused become manipulators and abuse those who are weaker. And this serves as a substitute for the power one is lacking over one's own life and is a compensation for insecurity. Richard says, I felt powerless most of my life, Michael. I feel like I've been controlled through my fear, and I usually respond with anger. I think you've got me pegged. Richard, it's an almost universal story in our culture. I could probably say the same thing to 90% of the population and be accurate. Most human beings have bought into a reality structures, usually for security reasons, that allow them to engage in, support, and be controlled by manipulative behavior, and they unknowingly give their aliveness to it. With awareness of what is driving us and tools with which to heal, we can free ourselves from these patterned responses. It is important to be discriminating about what you serve with your intelligence, resources, and time. Right livelihood means you do nothing that supports disintegrative energy in the world and use your time, intelligence, money, and energy to support only awareness and aliveness. And aliveness, I would offer another definition of the word aliveness would be the presence of love. You serve and you bring yourself to the point where the presence of love becomes your objective, living in that connected space where human life, the truth about who we are, literally runs your mind, runs your perception, runs your behavior, runs your words. And of course, oftentimes one of the first ways that we betray ourselves is through our speech. And when you watch people using speech that uncovers the fact that they're willing and ready and or perhaps doing behaviors that they would normally never do, tells you that they're functioning from a place of unconsciousness, a place where denial has taken over, the part of the mind that holds pain has been hidden, that part of the mind is then recruited and projected into one's brain's image of another, and one is sure that that other is the cause of their pain. When I reflect with my language, with my speech, and you know, this is the idea from Laws of Living of regulatory speech, that literally the speech that regulates my thoughts, my feelings, my creative process, and my physiology, my chemistry. If I watch my words, I will be able to catch my mind tricking me into using something based in hostility or fear that in my normal state of mind I would never do. So watching your words, observing your language, observing where your mind wants to go. And if you find yourself using something that's based in hostility or fear, then you know that you've stepped out of harmony with love. Now you can say, oh, but I'm being loving. I'm doing this for a loving reason. No. If you're using words based in hostility or fear that indicate a behavior you might wish to do, then you're telling yourself, you're informing yourself, there's a part of your own mind that you have dissociated from. And in order to heal, you've got to recapture that part of your mind. And most people, I mean, they'll do any kind of behavior in order not to confront that part of their own mind. And so we're here to recognize that the most deeply needed thing that each person needs to do is confront the parts of their minds they've dissociated from. Because the dissociation from unconscious pain means that they're creating their lives out of unconscious pain. That means there's destruction going on in physiology. That means there are going to be dynamics that come into relationships that will tend to destroy relationships. And so if I just, my words, you know, Shakespeare said, my words fly up, my thoughts remain below. What he's saying is this person is operating out of an unconscious mind. So if you utilize a word based in hostility or fear, you know, this is something I thought about doing or wanted to do or been restraining myself from doing, then notice that there's a dissociated part of your mind that's in hostility or fear. And the most desirable thing that there is accessing and removing that part of the mind, removing that content, forgiving it, remembering that forgiveness means removal. And keys that will support and assist you in that is the breath. I was doing some still point breathing this weekend, and one of the new pieces of the puzzle that I was shown in doing this session, thinking in terms of seek and you will find. And what I was shown is that the cutting edge or the leading edge of seeking is breathing. If you're not breathing, you're not seeking. Oh, your head can say I'm doing all of this, but if I'm holding my breath, I'm withholding the movement through the energy patterns that I need to be investigating. So if that fits and makes sense for everybody as we build brain cells and move into deeper and deeper layers and levels of understanding how this amazing first century Aramaic forgiveness process operates. And we're delighted that you're part of the conversation. Remember that at the end of the show, you can go to the archives on our website, whyagain.org. By the way, to watch the archives and be able to, you know, if you just go to the website and you listen to one of the videos, you can't forward or back it up to re-listen. You just have to listen through the whole 2 hours to get to, you know, if you want the last 2 minutes or first, you know, 20-minute point, you can't move with that. But if you go to iHeartRadio and download that app, you can access literally all of the radio shows that go all the way back to day one. Most of the podcast apps only go back 300 shows, and we've got 3,000 or more. But through iHeartRadio, if you download that, you can go back to any date that you want, all the way back to the beginning of our radio show 10 years ago. And once you load up a particular show, you can shift to, you can fast forward to, move the cursor to anywhere you want in the show. You want to go halfway, you want to go a quarter way, you want to go back, you want to go forth, you want to re-listen. It's the only app that I've found you can do that with yet. So iHeartRadio is a good app to listen to the show on if you're going back and listening to archives. If you haven't begun to use the forgiveness process yet, we invite you into making use of it. And two ways to access in-depth information about it are, one, you can go to our website, whyagain.org, H-Y-A-G-A-I-N.org. And in the upper left-hand corner of the homepage, you'll see that it's a whole new website. Thank you, Jeannie, for all that work. Then, and Susan for the assistance in doing that. In the upper left-hand corner, you see a Start Here link, and you click that link, and it'll walk you right through everything we know about forgiveness. Dozens and dozens and dozens of hours of understanding. And I'll just offer that, for me, working full-time with it, to really understand the why and how of this ancient Aramaic forgiveness process, working with it full-time took me 35 years. So plan to dedicate some time to building the brain cells to understand differently than you have been brainwashed by this culture to understand. So you can walk through radio shows where either Jeannie or Dr. Tim or myself have used the worksheet process with someone, walk through the whole thing step by step. There are at least 20 shows that that are live recordings from shows of doing the worksheet. So each one has a different approach, a different set of questions are answered, so you'll get a really big round picture of forgiveness by listening to those shows. And so the worksheet process is on the website. You can do the worksheet right there on the website live. If you wish, you can download the worksheets, print them, do them at home. And or, of course, when you come across questions, we're here 5 days a week to answer those questions. And you can go to your app store on your phone and type in the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, all one word, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. Type those words in. You're going to be looking at the world's only forgiveness app. You can do any one of two different worksheets, a simpler one and a more complex one. You can play the Dragon Klingon game that we put into the app, that Jeannie put into the app for kids. You can also access My Commitment in several of its forms. That's a new piece. Again, Jeannie spent, golly, honey, I don't even know how many hours, dozens upon dozens upon dozens of hours working on getting some glitches cleaned up with a new version of the operating systems that are out there. And so there's a brand new app. If you've had it on your phone before, whether you've got an iPhone or an Android, just go to your update and update it, and you'll be looking at a new app. So, and then, of course, if you use any and all of those resources, our objective in being here is to support you and assist you over the humps where maybe understanding isn't there yet. Maybe you don't have the brain cells to comprehend how some part of it works or what it means or what have you. So we're here dedicated to provide that support and delighted that you're here to lend your ear to be part of it and extend the understanding and the energy of forgiveness on a global scale. Our objective and our commitment is to make it available quite literally to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. And we're delighted that you're part of the process. And Ms. Jeannie, we've got about 40 minutes left. So do you have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up? Anything happening in chat room?
I have a hand up, and I believe that it is Cecilia. It's
awesome. Say hello.
480, you're on the air.
Yeah, you're right. It's me.
Hey there, young lady. Welcome. How are you today?
Hi. I'm good. Working on transcribing. I got two going at the same time right now. I wanted to take time to go over what we had talked on the show on Thursday, I think it was. First I want to get in what I got to work on. So this breathing thing, it's nothing that I'm good at. And even my voice coach for 4 years now has said, more air, breathe.
Yep.
You don't breathe out. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And even when I'm at home and I purposely, you know, here's a prayer from, I don't know what you want to call it, invocations that I learned through the Essene. So the angel of air, so I ask the angel of air, which is a particular day of the week, but I ask for it 24/7, enter my lungs and fill my body with the breath of life. I think that's all it is. I'm like, this doesn't work. Where is the angel?
Well,
you know,
here's my input.
Okay.
If you have, let's say, for instance, we have a child that was 4 when, and it could be something totally innocent. You know, I've watched adults and how, for instance, adults will purposely, consciously, parents will scare their children. You know, jump out of a closet or whatever. And let's just take something as simple as that. Let's say there's no actual threat. It's just, you know, a parent jumping out of a closet with a child, and the child just, their whole body goes into terror.
Yes.
And what that does is it locks up muscles. And
okay.
If the muscles associated with breathing are locked up, you can invite the angel of air in all you want. You've got to release the muscles.
Okay.
And so it might be a worksheet on fear and then focusing where the restriction is in the muscles and consciously, purposely working on opening those muscles. Another aspect of it can be as well is doing body work on those muscles. I know that in our energy field work, we teach a procedure that creates a release of lung restriction that most people have carried all their lives, and it's just the tightness in those muscles. And until they're open and released, you know, it's not easy to go there. Because when you release those muscles, you're going to get to look at what's stored in them. And sometimes it's pretty scary, terrifying sometimes. And so be patient with yourself. Remember that workshop that you did with me 20 years ago where we did the still point breathing process.
Michael, I don't think I did that with you. I don't remember doing still point with you. Maybe I did. I just don't.
Yeah, I hear you. Okay. Well, that was a weekend intensive, mini intensive, and we did do still point breathing in that one.
Okay. And what am I remembering that? And what you were going to finish saying something?
Well, I'm just
remember.
Saying just become conscious of wherever restrictions are, and oftentimes it's in the muscles in the chest that lock the chest down so that it won't open properly and fully inflate. And it relates to, I mean, the whole nervous system tends to lock down when one's in that state of terror and fear. And so consciously, purposely focusing on those muscles, focusing on the breath and expand until those muscles begin to release is key.
So what is this you do an intensive on the body something, and how do I get my hands on that?
Well, in our healing, or pardon me, in our Why Is This Happening to Me Again intensive, we do hands-on energy field work. It's one of the procedures that we teach. We don't have that on video yet.
You wouldn't be doing an intensive with COVID anyway, right? Hands-on.
Well, actually, we have done two intensives online, and in both intensives very successfully, which I wasn't sure was going to work very well, on Zoom, we're able to guide people through the still point process. So yes, and when we do, so remember I'd mentioned that that's an 80-hour video set that is available now in a self-study package. And that's the closest thing we'll be doing to an intensive anytime soon. We're looking at doing one of two intensives probably in the fall, either Laws of Living or Why Is This Happening to Me Again in teacher training. If we do the Why Is This Happening to Me Again in the fall, and it'll depend on how many people are interested and what demand there is, then we will create a video series for the hands-on energy field work. It's part of that intensive. But we don't have that as yet.
Oh, I would love that. So in the meantime, I don't know what drew me to a cassette tape back in the day when I just got sober and I wouldn't go to AA because men were just, I don't know, something inside of me just always attracts the ones that I'm just like, no, thanks.
I hear you.
So what I did to stay sober, honestly, this is what I said to myself. If I'm going to stay sober, I'm not going to get in relationships, and I'm not going to feel. Because I don't know if being a Cancer with a Pisces moon has anything to do with being a water sign and feeling more than anybody on the planet. But I knew that I really believed that my out-of-control feelings were and my relationships were what got me to drink. And so that's my
thought. That's the prime mover behind any kind of addiction is there's something in me that I don't want to look at. And, hey, a fifth of scotch and I'm feeling no pain. I don't have to feel. But the problem with that is that if you don't ever allow yourself to feel, then you never go the next step beyond the feeling to the thought disorder that's behind the whole issue. And you never forgive that. So it keeps running in the mind. Years, decades, decades, decades later, if I never face it, it's still running in my mind, unconsciously. I mean, it's hidden from me. I don't know it's there. But, hey, I feel when it starts to move, a fifth of scotch, and I feel a whole lot better. So I acknowledge you for being able to walk through and let go of the addiction. Now the next level of your work is going to be to allow yourself to breathe in deeply enough to access those thought disorders that need to be removed.
So on the work,
and I hear you diligently moving there. So nice work.
Okay, it says on the worksheet, I invite Ruka to assist me in healing, restore me to love, something. But the one that always makes me feel like I'm not doing the work is the last part that says, and come into direct contact with the dissociated projected parts of my mind, and remove them.
Right.
I don't ever feel like I come into those project. Am I supposed to, like, consciously have something come up and then I'll know what it is to remove it? Or do I just go through that state?
Well, let's go back to one of our first conversations on the show where you had an issue around a fellow who was, you were doing some work for, and there was concern that he would become sexually abusive or what have you. And what you allowed yourself to do was to touch into the underlying dynamics in yourself around that, to share that with him and to clean it up. You were doing that. You did that in that case. And I think, from what I recall, quite successfully, that's the process.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's like you go from one strength to the next, to the next, to the next. And sometimes there's quite a plateau in between because the levels of pain that have been built up, sometimes it takes some time to be willing to even approach that part of my own unconscious mind and allow it to come up and clean out. In fact, if you look at, you know, divorce, you look at war, you look at conflict, all of that is because people are not willing to look at what's in their own minds, their own unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
It's behind all of it.
Okay. So the
and
other
so
thing
notice how you're becoming more gentle with yourself. You're taking better care of yourself. So you're moving through it. It's just a process. And when you realize, you know, if you look back at, let's say, your family system, if you looked at mom, dad, brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, cousins, grandparents, was there anybody anywhere in your bloodline that you remember ever having a conversation about, you know, we need to look inside ourselves and clean up our minds?
Yes, and every time I did it, my mother said, you're mentally ill and we're going to put you away in an institution.
Okay. So, but here's my question. Was there anybody else in the family system you remember ever doing that?
Ever doing what?
Stepping into, I'm going to clean up what's going on in my own mind.
Nobody. I always was searching, but I didn't really do very well.
So note it. Well, actually, you're doing really well. You're doing really well because you're moving through some, you've moved through some pretty deep layers. And, you know, most people, I don't know exactly how many years you've been circling the earth, but most people are about the age of 40 before they even start to question.
Mm-hmm.
And notice that you are an early adopter. You're the one in the family who said, I'm going to go for it.
Yeah.
And when you're the only one, you know, gathering the tools, comprehending the tools, using the tools, having the courage to face what's going on in there after 1,000 generations of people being blotto, it's
being
a big task. Blotto, unconscious.
Oh, okay.
You know, just raging, doing whatever they, you know, felt like doing.
So I had just two more issues. Hopefully they're short and sweet, but the one doesn't sound like it's going to be short and sweet. Yeah, I rescued Ted, and I always had 7 dogs, and when we divorced, I ended up with the dogs, and when 2 died, 2 more came in a year and a half ago, and so I'm still up to 7. I can handle it. The thing I can't handle very well with my emotions is the 2 new ones recently. I've got a house where they lived on the other side of the house, had their own porch out to the front yard. You know, they could get out from the house. And the other dogs have it so they can get out the back. So, but I couldn't mingle them until just about a month and a half ago. Even before that, the boy dogs urinate. My furniture is got plastic all over it, okay? I don't mind that at all. I'm not like a high-maintenance interior decorator. So just recently though, I have a small grand piano, a baby grand, and I've had it since I was in my 20s. And so they decided to pee on the pedals that go from the bottom to the inside of the guts of the thing.
Right.
You know, to, okay.
Oh.
And I'll tell you what, I have usually the F word comes out, get the F out of here. I just want them to go into the yard.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And I'm just so incredibly, I can't, it's a lot of work to take care of these dogs. So one more thing, I get pushed over, and I'm not going to say that the thing pushes me over. I have to take responsibility for it, but I really need to do something because there is, at one time actually, I got this thing from a back store or something, and it's just a foam roller, and you roll your back on it. And it was before I saw you at the Creative Light Living Fellowship. I got this because I was doing home euthanasias with a veterinarian and picking up large dogs and putting them in my car and taking them to the cremation place. But my back was out really bad. And when I saw you at the Creative Living Fellowship, it was gone. We all went on the stage and something, and you did some magic thing or something. And it's been fine.
No, you did some work. Yeah.
How did I do anything? I was just laying.
Well, The best definition of back pain I've ever heard from comes from a back surgeon named Dr. Sarno, and he says back pain is unconscious rage.
Okay.
So what I hear you saying is, at that workshop, you handled some unconscious rage, and your back pain went away. That's pretty natural. That's a natural result.
Even though
you don't have to. It's all an inside job. You don't have to say a word.
Okay.
Don't have to say a word. All you have to do is be inspired to change your mind.
See? Well, I'm inspired to change my mind so I never go off on my dogs again. I scared the living hell you talked in this. You want to finish what you were saying? Go ahead.
Okay.
So notice
that the next layer of your rage is up for healing. And thank the dogs for bringing it up. Okay.
Okay,
thank the dogs for bringing it up.
Yes.
And then stop and realize that you are stepping into a major process of healing to start to face that and move through it. And that one of the drugs many people use in our culture is busyness. Now, I can't imagine how busy you are handling seven dogs. Busyness is a drug. It's the most common drug on the planet.
Okay.
It's the way most people avoid doing their work. Now, I don't have enough to do. I've got five dogs. I'm going to go out and get two more. Busy, you know.
They come to me on the streets. They're street dogs.
Yeah.
My heart, when I was a little kid, told myself that I would never let a dog be abused the way my family abused the dog that I got when I was a kid. And so I'm sure I have to do work to them. Okay, so my heart.
That would be a good one.
Up. Yes.
So that would be a good worksheet to do. And you might want to give yourself a little more space than you're going to dig in and do some deep levels of your family work that's been there for decades for you to do. And you're going to take care of seven animals. It might be time to rehome some of those animals, take some pressure off so you've got the space to do your work.
Well, actually, three of them are at death's door, so I'll be down to them.
Yeah.
They're very, very old.
Yeah.
So I'll be down shortly to four.
Well, we'll hold the space.
So you might want to just stay
at four for a while.
Oh, yes.
While you work through some of these things so that you're not so busy that you can't even think about what your work is.
Okay, I hear you. All right, I will do that for myself. In the meantime, I got this back roll thing that's only foam, and I was beating it on the floor. I was beating it on the wall. I was like, you ever do this again, beat, beat, beat. And I'm like, oh, my God, what is going on?
I'm crazy.
I'm not trying to pretend. Huh?
Oh, my God, I'm crazy.
No, really. And I thought, well, I
really, I got it.
Though, I'm serious. Like, they're going to change. They're not going to change, okay? They're not going to change.
Notice what, under stress, you did. You did to the dog.
A power person.
Exactly what your power person used to do to you.
Yes.
That you hated the most.
Yes.
There's a giant piece of forgiveness work to do in that.
I still just scratch the surface of the teacher thing, okay? My first grade teacher worksheet that I need to do, you know? So I got so many worksheets that are just lined up, just like going, well, we're back.
I hear you.
Okay.
I hear you.
Right.
Yep.
Okay.
You know,
right.
If you go back and you read the book of Job, the book of Job in the Old Testament is a story of a healing process, a healing crisis.
Yes. Okay.
And you get a sense when you listen to what Job says. First of all, he says, that which I feared most has come upon me. He realizes he set this up through his fear.
Okay.
And then his process gets so intense that he asks God for an intermission. Like, can we just stop this for a while, God? Do you remember what the intermission was that he asked for? Have you ever read that book?
No.
No.
Well, here it is. Job says to God, God, just give me time to swallow my saliva.
Oh.
That's how
you mean he was
can.
Busy to even, he was too busy to swallow his saliva? That's the whole point.
He was so engaged in the intensity of his healing process that he said, just give me this intermission, just long. And that, to me, what that says is the healing process gets really intense.
Yeah,
it's just, you know, that's part of the whole process. When I understand that and the intensity comes, I can cancel my goals, lay back, soften, relax, and realize that what I need and what my object of attention in this circumstance that brings this power person dynamic up is the active presence of love. I don't need the abuse of my power person sieved through me to the object out there in the world, thinking like I'm going to change. You know, my power person thought they could change me by doing this abuse. So I, not knowing any better, and that power person dynamic took that on and think, oh, well, if I just abuse enough, then I'll get things to change.
Yeah.
And that gets pretty intense.
That.
Yeah.
So
I hear you.
So, okay, I want to also ask you this because I listened to you read out of the book this morning, and I'm like, when I'm transcribing, I'm actually writing everything you're saying, and it's already in a book, so I'm just wasting time writing what you're saying in the transcription, right, when you're reading out of the book?
Well, you may or you may not, but it sounds like your guidance has been to write it down, and that may be the way you get it into the next level of your perceptual system, into your mind.
Oh, yes. I know it's like for me, I just don't want to do it if I need to, you know, I don't want to do it if I can. I love that you ad lib comments that are probably not in the book, okay?
I don't know
if you do that when you read. You do?
Yeah.
Yes?
Sure.
Okay. So, because that's how I understand things is when somebody gives their, I don't know what it's called, their ad lib, their take on what the book says.
Even though
you wrote the book, so you're still giving your take on what you wrote. So that, yeah, that
filling in the blanks, yes.
Yes, yes, that helps. That helps me. Because I'll tell you what, as I'm writing it, I'm thinking to myself, who in this world is going to understand this? This is me. I mean, this is like a conversation you'd have with Bruce Lipton would get it, wouldn't he?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, he did.
Or Dale, what's his name, Alan Hoffman, he would get it. But who else would get it? I mean,
anybody who takes the time to build the brain cells.
Yeah,
that's what it takes. And, you know, and I'll just offer, like, you know, I shared earlier in the show that I did a still point session yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And in my process, you know, having developed this over the last 50 years, I was able to move into, with my breath, dealing with some of the deepest, most profound issues I've dealt with in my life. And I'm at the 50-year point in this process.
Okay.
So when you realize that we're carrying around, literally, you know, if you listen to that Aramaic thought that says the sins of the fathers, and sin simply being an archery term, the energies that are off the mark of the fathers will be passed, yea, unto 3 and 4 generations. Remember that you and I have every thought, every feeling, every perceptual construct of mother and father. And mother and father's mother and father. And mother and father's mother and father's mother and father. And a generation before that. Literally, every thought, every feeling, every interaction, every reality of the 31 lives, including your own, so 30 before you, are in your structure. And there's some crazy stuff in there. And then, of course, when you realize that, you know, what did the fourth generation back, where did they get their thoughts, their feelings, their realities, but from the previous four? Who got them from the previous? Who got them from? We're cleaning up a multi-generational database that, you know, in just 30 generations, literally in your genes, in my genes, there are 1.6 billion people's lives recorded.
Yes,
and that's the root. That's part of the unconscious. And that's where Yeshua said, take care of the heart, the unconscious, for out of it are the issues in life. That's what we're opening and cleaning up. 1.6 billion lives. So most people say, well, but that's just too much. That's impossible. No.
Yeah.
No, you just do your work and you do one step at a time.
Okay.
And as you become stronger and more empowered, you get to do deeper levels of that work.
Okay.
And that, you know, and there are people who say, well, that doesn't make any sense to me. I'm never going to do that. It's like, well, okay, nobody's saying you have to do it. But if you want to truly live a fully awake human life, you have to do it.
Yes. Well, I'm really happy. I'm committed like I've never been before. And I want to get back to the breathing before I let you go is real quick. Is I when I was 31 and I didn't want to go back to these mostly men in AA meetings, I found a cassette tape by Sri Swami Satchitananda called Inner Peace Guided Meditation, and it would have you tense your muscles in each part of the body, tighter, tense it, and then we release, and then you would release, and I'd be like, oh, yeah, this felt good. I remember it felt good back then, and I would get into a deep state of relaxation. I just wonder, since there's like no, you don't have your video out now to work with the muscles, would that be something that would be, I mean, you don't know what the tape is, but I'm just.
Actually, what you might want to do is go to our website and go to the catalog. There's a link up toward the upper right that says purchase products. And there's a 20-minute CD where I walk through a relaxation meditation and invite people to step into and go into each of the systems of the body, the glands or the eliminative, the nerve, the digestive, the muscular, and the circulatory, softening and opening each of those. And it's a powerful adjunct to opening your field and touching into what needs to be dealt with. So you might want to get that video or
that
audio.
That sounds great. Yes, I will do that.
Jeannie, is that audio on the streaming services or a link to purchase that audio on streaming?
I was just looking.
Wellness through wellness meditation.
Yeah, but the stream is only like for 3 months or something, right? You can buy
No.
It, but
if you purchase anything of ours on the streaming service, it's yours permanently to stream forever.
Oh, really?
Anything. Anything and everything.
Else?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anything you do. If you buy, you know, I was suggesting some time ago that you look at that codependence intensive. There are 80 hours of video. Teaching, processing, question, answer, and work. If you buy that package, then that's yours permanently.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. Is it a stream?
Streaming, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
You'll get a full set of links to 80 hours of video.
You recommend that would be good for me to buy, but does that include this relaxation thing?
It is not included in that, but if you decide you want to get the codependence intensive, we'll include one. That's easy.
Oh, okay. I'll let you know. I'll look at it later today in between taking breaks from my dog.
Cool.
Okay.
All right. All right, young lady.
Here.
Well, we'll hold the space.
Okay.
Nice work. That's awesome.
Okay.
I can really sense the progress you're making, and it's fabulous.
Oh, good.
Nice work.
Good. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Holding the space. Okay. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, I think Susan hit one again, so let me check. 610, did you mean to hit one again?
Yep, I did. Quick question.
Why there, young lady?
Hi. Question about the Gospel of Mark. There's the story about Jesus sending out his disciples to teach. And he said,
two by two. Two by two.
Right. And so he says, if they don't receive the teaching, shake the dust off your feet
what's the quote? I have it written down here. Yeah. Shake off the dust from your feet as a testimonial against them. So I thought that was a little harsh. It's like a judgment.
Yeah, it sounds
I
a
wondered
little harsh.
If you, so what did the Aramaic say? Do you happen to know?
You know, I don't know, but I would suspect that that's probably a misinterpretation. You know, if someone were to ask me that question right now, I would say, you can't lead a horse to water. Pardon me. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. But you can make them thirsty.
Right.
So I'd say to someone, if they're not ready, if they don't have the brain cells to hear it yet, they're not going to be able to accept it. And to me, that would be perfectly okay. Just keep engaging and helping them to build the brain cells until their brain can generate a perceptual construct that will support them moving into the next level of understanding in their work. That would be what I would say. But I don't know what that passage is from the Aramaic. But it sounds like misinterpretation to me.
It does to me, too. And I asked Dr. Tim, because we were just yakking about every possible thing, and I had saved this question for you, but I asked him, and he said he had no idea. That's a question for Michael or for Dale Allen Hoffman. But he said, I would assume just what you said, Michael, a gentle, well, they're not ready now, but let's stay in touch sort of thing, just the loving response.
Yeah, and that may have been what the disciples heard and recorded, but it probably wasn't what he said. That would be my take.
Right. Okay, good. Question number two. I did a worksheet yesterday morning having my vague depression anxiety hovering around, and I thought, okay, let's have a look at this. When I did the forgiveness patter, which only means to concentrate. You have it sort of on the margin of your seventh step, on the right margin.
Right.
If we take time to do it. What came to me was something new. And it can't be a memory because I don't really understand how a fetus could have a memory. But when I was born, my mom told me, we thought you were a boy because you were so lively in the womb. And then as a little kid and a baby, she said, you were a spunky, lively little girl. And I always took that to be a great compliment and a testimonial to the fact that I loved life and I was enthusiastic and even inspired.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I invented that to go with what little my mother said. But in remembering that, the depression and anxiety totally lifted. I had this wonderful day. What do I do this
nice.
Morning? I'm back in the funk. So I said,
next
okay,
layer.
Let's go back to the little baby. And the baby isn't helping out. But I did do a, you know, I taught my Pilates class and I did some of my work and I cooked a meal and sort of during the day. And this is what usually happens. The bad early morning feeling that I don't always get by any means. Usually I love the early morning. It just kind of melts off, and for no particular reason, even if I've done a worksheet or not, there's sometimes no obvious connection. So thoughts
and
on
question.
That.
Question. Does it have less and less control each time that opportunity to melt it off comes?
Does it have less and less control?
Anxiety, depression. If you were to look at 6 months ago, a year ago, today, does it have less control over my mind? Does it hang around a shorter period of time?
Yeah.
Today than it did 6 months ago. Okay. So my take would be what you're doing is you're peeling up layers, layer by layer. And each layer that you melt off by correcting the thought disorder, you know, you've had some pretty heavy-duty thought disorders about yourself and what quality of being you are. And what I heard you doing yesterday was touching into, oh, yeah, I was alive. I was vital. I was life. And that's what's going to throw off those thought disorders and bring correction. So what I hear you doing is layers of your work, and you know, you'll get to the point where those depressive, the mind energy that creates that anxiety or depression will simply disappear from your life totally. That'd be my offering. As you continue doing your work.
Mm-hmm.
Well, notice it's happening.
Okay.
You know, I mean, look, at there was a time just a couple of years ago when you needed pills to keep it from running your life. And notice that you don't need those. And when they come up, you take your time and you touch into a corrective thought. And that dissolves the errant thought. How many generations of errant thoughts, if you look at, you know, the question that I asked a little bit earlier of Cecilia, you know, can you think of parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins, sisters, brothers, who ever thought about cleaning up their minds and living as the presence of love?
No.
Or were you the early adopter?
I was the early adopter for sure, and my mom used to say, isn't that really selfish? You know, looking at your issues and going over stuff, what's the point? And I'd say, Ma,
that's probably the thought disorder that mother used to keep from facing what she needed to face and deal with. That was her thought disorder that inhibited her, that prevented her from doing that piece of work.
Right. Yeah, she didn't do the work. In fact, she kind of, after she raised the five of us kids, she and my dad moved to Florida. Our whole family's up in New England. Moved to Florida and did not even really know her grandkids. She was pooped, for one thing. And I figure she felt as if she had put in her time and she wanted to have her own life. And I think she was sort of happy. You know, she learned how to square dance, and she'd take my dad until he protested and said, no way. Then she did ballroom dancing, and he dutifully did that until he said he hated it and he wouldn't do it. Then she found a widower with whom she could go dancing, and she made herself all these little dresses. And my mother just, I felt as if she kind of never went into any of that ever and was somehow okay not going in. And Tim's mother always said,
notice what she did.
If it doesn't work.
Say that again.
Tim's mother said, why fuss with a machine that it works? So why mess with it? Why look at those things?
Yeah.
That was Tim's mother.
Yeah. And remember the thing that causes the power person dynamic to come into play and take over our thoughts, feelings, and behaviors is elevated stress. And it sounds like when Mom went to Florida, she got rid of the elevated stress.
Yeah.
And she went into things that allowed her to avoid those internal stresses and so was able to function fairly well with them. But if she'd stepped back into the family stress, it probably would have taken over again. So she found a way that worked for her.
Right, she did. That she did.
Well, congratulations on the work you are doing, and especially the work you're doing with your son and your grandsons. I mean, to have your grandson after that period of time where he didn't even want to talk to you, acknowledge that the only reason he's alive is because you did forgiveness work with him. I mean, that's monumental. So congratulations. That, you know, Mom didn't know how to do that, so she just sounds like she avoided it and allowed it to be passed on. You're doing something about it, and that's awesome.
Well, I hope it holds. We don't know what Luke is doing right now. Anyway, but that's a whole other thing. And the show is almost over, so I won't bring it up.
All right, young lady. Well, we'll be holding the space, and perhaps we'll get to talk about that tomorrow. In the meantime, everybody, create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. The world needs it. You can give it. Blessings.
Catches.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.